ஓம் நமோ பகவதே ஸ்ரீரமணாய. ஸ்ரீ ரமண மகரிஷி, ஜெயந்தி சாவனீர், 1965. ஃபோர்வர்ட் பை மிஸ்ஸஸ் மணி சாகுகர். நோ அக்கவுண்ட் ஆஃப் த ரிலீஜியஸ் அண்ட் பிலசாபிக்கல் ட்ரெடிஷன் ஆஃப் பாரத் கேன் பி கம்ப்ளீட் வித்வுட் ரெஃபரன்ஸ் டு த கான்ட்ரிபியூஷன் ஆஃப் ஸ்ரீ ரமண மகரிஷி டு த எவல்யூஷன் ஆஃப் அவர் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் கல்ச்சர். இந்தியா, திஸ் ஹோலி மதர்லேண்ட் ஆஃப் அவர்ஸ், ஹேஸ் எவர் கிவன் பர்த் டு எ கேலக்சி ஆஃப் இன்கார்னேஷன்ஸ் and sages in fulfillment of Sri Krishna's promise that when a need of a savior is emergent, then once again such an avatar appears for the redemption of man. The descent of God into humanity is for the ascent of man into Godhead. Among such transcendental appearances, Sri Ramana of Arunachala fame stands out as a stately tower of light and inspiration. It is moha, or a false sense of attachment to fleeting values, that acts as a check to an outlook of expanded vision. But if a hunger to grow in spiritual grace manifests itself in the human heart, God steps in the form of a guru, sometimes within the heart, but more often in the form of another personality, to awaken the intellect and illuminate with a sense of discrimination. The path of knowledge thus comes into its own. Bhagavan Ramana Maharishi had this definite spiritual message for man. The task undertaken by him was to reopen the Jnan Marg to seekers of truth. In actual fact, the self-enquiry, "Who am I?" advocated by Bhagavan Ramana, gave a new impetus to the ancient path of knowledge trodden by rishis of the Upanishads. But whereas the call of the Upanishads was for realizing Brahma Vidya, the Maharishi's emphasis was on the understanding of the self. "The source of one's being is also the source of the universe," declared the Great One, "and it is when in one's being illusions, confusions and contradictions take to flight that illumination comes flooding in." Though Sri Ramana is known preeminently as the greatest apostle of Jnan Yoga, his heart was full of deep devotion and compassion. The exquisite hymns he composed on Arunachala are so full of tender sentiments and resignation to the divine that they may well be termed a lyrical thesis on bhakti. He was one of those Advaitins who gave to the impersonal reality a warm and emotional content. Not all, however, can go to Bhagavan to learn the difficult path of self-analysis. Bhagavan understood this, and his greatness lies in the way he adapted his help and grace to the needs and swabhav of those who sought him as a refuge. He combined in his charming personality a rare fusion of sweetness and light. The birthday of a saint is a holy and an auspicious occasion. This souvenir gives us the privilege and the opportunity of laying at his lotus feet our garlands of loving thoughts. Sri Ramana's silent transmission of love and grace is still there. It is for us to cultivate a sensitive awareness for these great and generous gifts. For his birth, no less than his passing, is a resurrection.
The Mountain Path, a quarterly journal, is issued from this Ramanashram as one means of maintaining the high spiritual and intellectual level that Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi's teaching demands. The aim of this journal will be to set forth the traditional wisdom of all religions and all ages, especially as testified by their saints and mystics, and to clarify the paths available to seekers in the conditions of our modern world. We hope that devotees of Sri Maharshi and others also who are drawn to the perennial spiritual wisdom will lend us their support. We also find that many devotees who are able to come to Tiruvannamalai only rarely or not at all are eager for ashram news. For their benefit, we shall issue an ashram news bulletin as a supplement to each issue. Usually, this will be a small part of the journal.
Reflections by Dr. T.M.P. Mahadevan, the sage of Arunachala. Tiruvannamalai, called Arunachala in Sanskrit, is one of the most sacred places of pilgrimage for the Hindus, as God is worshipped there in the form of light. Once in a year, the holy beacon is lit on the top of the hill, and thousands of people go thither to see the light and adore it. But all through the year, the place has now become an international port of call for spirituality because Maharishi Ramana lived there for over half a century, shedding the flame of God realization. As a young lad in his teens, he went to Arunachala, and since then he made it his life abode. The very name Arunachala served as an imperious call from the divine, and he simply obeyed the call. The exalted state of egolessness came to him, and once it comes, it never goes. Strictly speaking, it is not one state among other states of experience. It does not come nor occur in a given moment of time. It is the eternal status, sahaja sthiti. Because of avidya, nisense, one does not recognize it, and when avidya is made to disappear, the self-luminous nature of the spirit shines. This is what is called moksha in Vedanta. It is not an after-death experience. The continuance of the body is not inconsistent with release. It is only the identification of the self with ego, etc., that is an obstacle to the realization. When the obstacle has been removed, one becomes a jivan mukta, free while living. We hear of many such great souls in our scriptures. But in the Maharishi, we had a contemporary Jivan Mukta, a living commentary on the most sublime texts of Vedanta. Many a statement of the scriptures, like the one in Bhagavad Gita about seeing inaction in action and action in inaction, will remain obscure and unintelligible unless one comes into contact with sages like the Maharishi. Apparently, Sri Ramana seemed to take interest in things that happened around him. He recognized people and sometimes talked to them. Even creatures belonging to the subhuman species claimed his attention. He used to lend a helping hand even in the kitchen by dressing vegetables for cooking. But all these modes of action were performed without the least attachment to them. In truth, they were no actions at all, since they were void of egoity. The core of activity had been removed, only the shell remained. And that too for us, the onlookers. Nothing seemed to affect this rock of ages. He stood as a witness to all the phenomena. The distinctions of high and low had no meaning for him. The stranger and foreigner who visited him felt absolutely disarmed and free even at the first sight. One may be foreign to another or look strange, but how can one be alien to oneself? The Maharishi, who had crossed the boundaries of individuality, naturally and effortlessly felt, if we may use such a poor word, one with all. Like the Pandita, that is the wise one of the Gita, he looked upon all as the same, the high born and the lowly of birth, the cow and the elephant, the dog and the dog eater. These classifications may have meaning for us who are caught in the network of difference. To him who had seen the non-dual Brahman, which is Sama, the same, there was no plurality, no difference. It was a delightful and unique experience to sit in the presence of Maharishi and look in the full glare of his beatific eyes. One might go to him with a medley of doubts and questions. But very often it happened that these upsurgings of the mind died down and were burned to ashes as one sat before the sage. One had a pretaste of that pristine state of which the Upanishad speaks when the knot of the heart is cut and all the doubts are dispelled. One stepped back and watched how the turbulent mental stream quietened down and received an undisturbed reflection of the self-luminous spirit. What one might succeed in attaining after a prolonged course of yogic discipline, one got with perfect ease and effortlessly in the proximity of the Maharishi. True, this experience might not stay for long. One might get back to the world and wallow again in the dirt of worldliness. But still, the impress of spirituality that had been gained was never lost. Seldom was one the depths of whose soul had been stirred by the sublime look of the sage without the desire to go again to him and receive fresh intimations of the eternal. People sometimes went to him in the hope that by his darshana look their earthly wants would be fulfilled. But very soon they discovered their own foolishness in asking for fleeting pleasures when the imperishable bliss awaited them. Instead of getting dissatisfied that their cravings went unfulfilled, they would feel thankful that they had been saved from a delusion and a snare. Nachiketas of the Kathopanishad was offered by Yama all the pleasures of all the worlds in lieu of self-knowledge for which he had asked. But the true son of spirituality that the boy was, he refused to be tempted into accepting the pleasant in the place of the good. The Maharishi, who to us was the personification of the supreme good, transmuted our lower passions and desires into mokshakama, an intense longing for release. Some went to the Maharishi with curiosity to get from him a cure-all for the world's ills. They used to ask him what solution he had for the problems of poverty, illiteracy, disease, war, etc. Social reform was their religion. A reordering of society was what they sought after. They framed their questions in different ways. What message had the Maharishi to give to the social reformer? Was it not the duty of every enlightened citizen to strive for bettering the lot of his fellow men? When misery and squalor were abroad, how could anyone who had a feeling heart keep quiet without exerting himself in doing his bit for the world welfare? The invariable answer that the sage gave to all those who put such questions was, "Have you reformed yourself first?" Very often, it happens that the so-called social service is a self-gratification of the ego. In much of what passes for altruism, there is a core of egoism. Such service blesses neither the server nor the served. The former's pride increases and the latter's demoralization is made complete. It is only such service as that which contributes to the reduction of the ego that is the harbinger of good, and the influence of the ego cannot be lessened unless one knows, however remotely, that the ego is not the self, that it is only the pseudo-self responsible for all the evil and misery in the world, and that the final and lasting felicity could be realized only when the root cause of the ego, namely ignorance, is dispelled. And so, unless one seeks to know the true self, one cannot do real service to the society. Reform must begin with oneself. He who is on the path renders service to the fellow beings so that his ego may be cleansed and become attenuated and ready to be discarded. And he who has realized the end and has become a Jivan Mukta performs work, or more correctly appears to us to perform work, in order that the world may be saved, Loka Sangraha. So, self-inquiry is the basis of true service, and self-knowledge is its culmination. The sage of Arunachala had no new message for humanity. What he taught through silence, more than through words, was the ageless gospel of the Vedanta. Shankara cites in his Sutra Bhashya a text from the Smriti in which it is stated that when approached by Bhadva for instruction, sage Bhaskali kept quiet and, on being questioned again and again, said, "We have declared the truth already, but you have not understood. The self is peaceful, quiet, upasanta." The Maharishi's teaching was exactly the same as that of the Upanishadic sage. He seldom spoke. It is in the stillness of silence that the depths of the spirit are reached. Words and thoughts cannot lead us far enough. Even the words of scriptures help us only up to a point, and there they must stop. It is said of young Dakshinamurti that he taught his elderly disciple in the language of silence. It is true that only a few can understand what is taught in silence. And so, sometimes the Maharishi used to talk, but he warned his interlocutors at the same time that both questions and answers belong to the realm of avidya, nescience. Though the latter did serve as signpost toward the light of wisdom, doubt should assail the mind so long as the mind lasted. It was only when the eternal state of mindlessness, amani bhava, was realized that all doubts of the mind and questionings of the heart would roll away like mist before the rising sun. The Maharishi's teachings may be stated aphoristically thus: seek to know the self, and the knowledge will make you free. The Chandogya records the story of Narada, master of many sciences and arts, going to Sanat Kumara and confessing that he was sorrow-stricken though he was very learned. He knew that all his learning would be of no avail and that self-knowledge alone could save him. So he approached Sanat Kumara with the request, "Help me across the ocean of sorrow," and received from him the wisdom about the great, the true self. The supreme commandment of scripture is, "Know the self, Atmanam Viddhi." The Maharishi has said over and over again that Atmavichara is the one sure and inescapable path to liberation or release. Other sadhanas may help in this process more or less remotely. It is jnana alone that is the direct means to moksha. This is essentially the view of Advaita Vedanta. And the reason for it is that moksha is the eternal nature of the self and not something which is to be newly acquired or accomplished. No operation, either of the body or of the mind, can bring about release. The ever-free status of the self is not recognized because of the ignorance which veils the true and projects the untrue. When this ignorance is removed, one realizes one's eternal nature as the non-dual, unconditioned self. That which affects the removal of ignorance is wisdom. And what paves the way for wisdom is Atmavichara. The inquiry, "Who am I?" is not to be regarded as a mental effort to understand the mind's nature. Its main purpose is to focus the entire mind at its source. The source of the psychosis, I, is the self. What one does, self-inquiry, is to run against the mental current instead of running along with it, and finally transcend the sphere of mental modifications. It is comparatively easy for us to disentangle ourselves from the wrong identification with the physical body and material objects. But the identification with the ego is hard to get over. As the Panchapadika, a commentary on Sankara Sutra Bhashya, says, "The conceit I is the first superimposition on the self. The outer layers of ignorance may fall easily. The last one, however, is difficult to tear. The best way to remove it is to track it down to its source. When there is awareness of the source, which is the self, the ego vanishes. And when the I has been crossed out through jnana, there is no more bondage and consequent sorrow. The cessation or non-cessation of the body has nothing to do with release. The body may continue to exist and the world may continue to appear as in the case of the Maharishi. That makes no difference at all to the self that has been realized. As Shankara says, there is no need to dispute whether the knower of Brahman bears the body for some time or not. How can another objective, one's own experience realized in the heart of Brahman knowledge as well as continuance of the body? In truth, there is neither the body nor the world for him. There is only the self, the eternal existence Sat, and the self-luminous intelligence Chit, the unexcellable bliss Ananda. Such an experience is not entirely foreign to us. We have it in sleep, where we are conscious neither of the external world of things nor of the internal world of dreams. But that experience lies under the cover of ignorance. So it is that we come back to the fantasies of dream and the world of waking. Non-return to duality is possible only when nescience has been removed. To make this possible is the object of Vedanta, to inspire even the least of us with hope and help us out of the slough of despond is the purpose of such illustrious exemplars as the Maharishi. Sri Ramana's example is unique because he did not first read and then experience. Experience came to him first, and only later he found corroborative evidence in the scriptural texts to an unbelieving world which is impatient and wants to burn its sacred books. Sri Ramana has this message to offer, namely that the real book of life is within, and that if we but turn to it and consult its pages, it will open up undreamt of vistas leading to limitless felicity and bliss. Om Tat Sat.